Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, April 28th, 2025. I am Carl James, joined by Zach Horwitz, Chris Feeney, and Cassidy Palmer. Indiana went 1-3 on the week, suffering a series sweep to the Big Ten leaders Iowa over the weekend, which shut the door on the Hoosiers' chances for a third straight at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. The week started on a very bright note with a run rule win over a very good Ball State team at Victory Field in Indianapolis on Wednesday night. The Hoosiers got eight straight batters on base on the way to a nine-run fifth inning. Friday night in Iowa City saw the Hoosiers continue solid play. The pitching was exceptional, with Pete Haas and Ryan Kraft combining for five scoreless innings to start the series. Gavin Siebold gave up an early solo shot, but settled in to keep the Hoosiers tied with Iowa at one run apiece, forcing extra innings. IU's batters reached base 14 times in the game, but couldn't get the big hit. Iowa walked it off in the 10th with a two-strike squeeze play. The rest of the weekend was tough to watch. Hoosier hitting was ineffective at even running up pitch counts and getting on base. Cole Gilley and Ben Grable were hit hard for both of their starts. That combination eventually led to Iowa winning both games by run rules. Indiana dropped to ninth place and 12-12 in the Big Ten Conference. With 12 teams invited to the tournament, Indiana is still in pretty good spot to qualify for the only chance they will have to make the NCAAs now, winning the conference's automatic bid. In former coaching news today, Mississippi State relieved head coach Chris Lemonis of his duties. Lemonis was head coach of the Hoosiers from 2014 to 2018, leading Indiana to three regionals in 4 years. Lemonis won the 2021 national championship with the Bulldogs, setting a high bar that they have struggled to return to. They also promoted former IU pitching coach Justin Parker to interim head coach for the remainder of the season. As we typically do when things aren't going that well, we open with our roundtable discussion. This time we'll start with Cass. How is it that a team with two Golden Spikes candidates is faced in April with a need to win an automatic bid to make a regional? Cass, your thoughts.
I think it really comes down to consistency. And that's something this team across the board kind of hasn't had. Now that's going to happen when you start 4 to 5 freshmen almost every game. That's just a natural part of being freshman led. Like that's what you're going to see. But it goes even a little bit further. I did some quick numbers, and there have been 17 games where the offense has scored double-digit runs. In those games, the pitchers are giving up, on average, 5 runs for those games. That's great to see. That's going to lead to a lot of wins. However, this team also has 17 games scoring 5 runs or fewer. And we've always seen that, not always, but in the last few years with the pitching staff, it's always the 6 runs or fewer. But if your offense is only scoring 5 or fewer runs in that many games, that's not going to help. And making it even worse, in those games where IU scores 5 or fewer, the pitching is giving up an average of 7.5 runs a game. So when the offense is really clicking, the pitching seems to be doing about the same. But in those games where the bats are struggling, whether it's they're just hitting a bunch of atom balls or they're doing weak contact or striking out, whatever, when they don't score as many runs, the pitching staff also starts to struggle. I think that's really what it comes down to, is that consistency. And again, like I said, a lot of it comes from having this many young guys seeing this significant time being such significant pieces.
So do we think this is like a confidence issue that something goes wrong in the game and things just seem to snowball?
I think that probably doesn't help. And some of it might come down to, I know, and I know we've seen a little bit of change recently, but guys like Devin are not big vocal guys. They're not vocal leaders. They lead by example, absolutely 100%. But they're not the big vocal leaders. And I'm not sure this team really has that in a year where, again, it's so freshman driven. And that might be contributing to some of it.
Any other thoughts, Zach, Chris?
Well, inconsistency really is the term to use just to wrap up the whole season. And Jeff Mercer even mentioned that if he had to use a word, it was inconsistent. And that was before this month of April. I sent out a tweet that was relatively long. So in the month of April, I looked, Indiana went 6-6 on the weekend. And it seemed every time that the door opened and you say, okay, they need to win this series to make a run, they win one. They go 3-0 at Michigan State. So they have some momentum going into the next game. And then they go 1-2 at Illinois. Then they bounce back 2-1 against Maryland. And then they have the big RPI boost at Iowa. You lose a heartbreaker on Friday night, 2-1 in extra innings. Just a well-rounded game. Both teams played a great game, and it is what it is. You don't come out on top. Then you come out Saturday. And it seemed like the offense just flipped on its head. And Sunday's approach was really poor. They only had three hits. And I mean, along with that, I think the team is just top heavy. When you look at the bats, it's Devin Taylor and Corbin Dickerson that lead the offense. Dickerson didn't have a hit this weekend. So when Taylor and Dickerson aren't leading and they're back to back in the order, if they're not producing, the rest of the offense usually isn't either. And you look at the pitching side too. Ryan Kraft has been phenomenal, but Cole Gillies' last two starts have been poor. Ben Grable wasn't at his best this weekend also in a 10-run loss. So when you don't have Dickerson and Taylor on the offensive side, and then you don't have Gilly and Grable doing their thing on the pitching side, I think that's the problem with this team. They're not deep enough, and that's where they're in the spot that they are right now with only 11 games to go. And that includes a series against a team that isn't, I mean, Abilene Christian is an out of conference team that isn't going to boost the RPI. So they're in a tough spot now, but it is what it is. You just got to qualify and go from there for the Big Ten tournament, that is.
Yeah, I think deep enough is a really good point. I mean, everything has to be running on all cylinders, right? And a lot of times, to go off what Cass said, these bats are coming up down 6-0, you know? And I compare it to like when you bring the closer in and it's not a safe situation, usually that closer isn't as good. And now these bats have been coming up down 6-0, down 4-0, down 8-0. And I'll preface this by saying I've never taken that at bat even in high school. So I don't know, but I have to assume that the mentality is different when you're in a ball game than when you're not. And I would think that's going to, lead to the way the run rules have gone each way, you know. I mean, obviously, this weekend was a lot about pitching. I can go back to last week's pod, and it was giving me a headache the way Cass was like, first in the Big Ten, first in the Big Ten, first in the Big Ten. And it was all the pitching stats for Iowa. So we knew we had arms to face. Now, I didn't know we were going to score a run in the first and not for another 13 innings, and then score two runs and then not for another 9 innings. Like, we're still on that 9 innings. Like, we still haven't scored. So I never would have imagined that. So this was bad. Okay. And it is what it is. You got to call a spade. You scored three total runs, You guys were at the Vic. What was that inning? We scored 9 in 1 inning.
Yes, nine
Or
in one
whatever it
inning.
was. You know what I'm saying? We scored three runs in a series. Okay. So obviously that's not gonna, be acceptable if you're gonna be fighting and scratching and scrawling for the at-large bid. That's not the way we're looking at this season from the way, from this going forward. But again, we have to get in the Big Ten tournament. I think there's, what is it, a game and a half? Out of 12th right now, the way
Yeah,
I'm looking at it. I go
that's
by
correct.
Carl's list. I don't know about all these D1 lists. I go by Carl's. Garls tells me we were a game and a half out of 12th. We got some work to do, folks. We want to get in there. Before we hit record, we were discussing that season when we had to fight and get in an eighth seed to the Big Ten, and we took out Maryland. And, you know, I like that one. That's a little chalk on the old board there. So let's just get in. Yeah, it's the four seed. Our goal, sure, that's the way this new pod system works out. But let's just get in and see where the card, you know, what do you say? Whatever your cards you got, you got to play them.
Yeah, and I think going back, Cass brought up before that there's not really leaders, vocal leaders, and that the freshmen are playing a lot. And I brought it up multiple times this year on our podcast that the issue has been the pitching staff starting slow. And when they're playing from behind, they never seem to come out of it. And the offense is slow, and there's not energy in the dugout and stuff. So, I mean, this past week, and you look at it, Iowa was up 7 runs after 4 innings on Saturday, and then they're up by 6 in the third inning on Sunday. And you're just, I mean, the confidence is just shot. I think they're a young team, they're an immature team, and that's what happens when you don't have the energy in the dugout.
And it's, but to Carl's point, to start it, it still provides you with two All-American candidates, because when things are good, these two guys are raking, right? Devin's stats are still there. Dickerson's stats are still there. So that's why you have two, you know, guys with these amazing statistics, is because when things are good, they're really good. And the way college baseball now is, honestly, once you're up 8-0, you're seeing arms you can crush.
Yeah.
So you're going to pad the stats a little. No offense to our guys, because it's happening all around the league. All the whole league is doing it. You pad your stats in an 8-0 game because you got to burn arms. It was like the Kentucky Regional. People couldn't understand, you know, why we kind of punted that game to go to game 7 against Kentucky. Like, no, that's what you're supposed to do. You save your guns. You give them an extra day rest. You try to win the series on Sunday, and you punt on Saturday. This isn't Major League Baseball. I mean, this is the way it is. And so, yeah, you pad them a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, the stats are looking pretty good. Carl's got a point. They're right there with the All-American stats.
Yeah. And that leads back to my point about the team being top-heavy. When Dickerson and Taylor start the game out and they're – hitting doubles in the gap and home runs to start the game, the whole team is flowing like that. I mean, that goes through a young team when they see their leaders, the older guys at the top of the order that are hitting the ball, and they're getting momentum. That's really what plays into it. And when they're slow, they really are slow, and they have been all year. And you brought up the Victory Field game that we're at the other day. I mean, that inning was just, it was hit after hit. It was not home runs, because they were playing at Victory Field, which is much bigger in dimension. They were just racking up hit after hit. I think they had 7 base hits in the inning with multiple walks in there as well, scoring on a wild pitch. And that was the offense that you see all 9 hitters come through. They batted around, and all the production was with nobody out. It was just an endless cycle of hits. So that's what you get out of a team that starts 5 freshmen.
And that is such a rarity in this game. More and more so in recent years, where you've got, you know, not just seniors, but fifth-year seniors teams that are stacked with these, you know, 23, 24-year-old hitters. And Indiana has got these great, talented guys. But unlike a lot of the teams they're facing, they haven't been, you know, facing D1 pitching consistently for 3-4 years.
And kind of going back a little bit with what Zach was saying about how, like, when the bats are rolling and things are happening, there's more energy and that helps. Looking at games where where IU wins big, wins by 8 or more runs. There are 17 of the, for some reason, the groupings I was looking up all ended up being 17 games. That's a fun little quirk. But there were 17 games where IU won, or where the final score was a difference of 8 or more runs. IU has won 13 of those and lost 4. In close games, where the final margin is plus or minus 3, there are 17 of those games. IU has only won 6 of them and has lost 11.
I thought it was going to be lower, Cass.
I honestly did too.
Yeah.
But that's
it was
still.
it was so invigorating that Friday night to come back on Maryland like that, because it felt like it had never happened. Like there was one other one on the beginning of the season where we came back, but we lost that game anyway. And then there was like one other one I remember at the BART. I think Denny walked it off, if I remember, after the video replay didn't hit right. So like I can't even remember six. Six seems amazing to me.
Yeah.
Wait, one of those was that Indiana State game where they were up a decent chunk and then almost blew it.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And then it becomes a close game.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I think there are a few.
Just hasn't been the year for the comeback late. And I think a lot of that is also, you know, we haven't had the pitching the way we've had it in years past, right? Like, I mean, the last 2 years, yes, we haven't really had starters. But when you have guys that you could roll out there for seven innings, you have a lot more options. You have a lot more people you can go to for a shorter amount of time. You know, you don't have a Bierman and a Summer and a Milto and a McKay. You know, you just don't have these guys.
Yeah. And that also leads to, I think, some pressure being felt by the offense. It's that pressure that you feel like you have to perform. And baseball hitters sometimes struggle when they're feeling pressure and they're not relaxed. And that's a possibility. I'm not saying that's what's happening, but that's a possibility.
Well, that's the extra inning story, right? Once it's tied, everyone tries to hit the walk-off home run, where if three guys would hit a single, we would win anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and looking at it a little closer, in those games where IU scores five runs or fewer, only two of those are wins. There are 17 of those games.
17 everything.
Yes, only two of those are wins, Northwestern and the first UCLA game.
I mean, to me, that UCLA Friday night was like promise, right? Like, this is what we're going to do in their house against this team. Mm-hmm. So we've given it, you know, there's been hope. There's like, this is what we could be if we're running with the car completely, I don't know, firing all cylinders. But when we're not, we can't make it around the block.
Yeah. And that's why you can't dismiss the possibility of this team winning a Big Ten tournament, because when things are firing on cylinders, they're just as good as almost anybody in the country. So the talent is there, but to the point that Cass and Zach have made, there's the consistency has not been.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how to even look at these. I don't even know how to say it. What do you say? Aberdeen, Texas? Like it's like their exhibition games, honestly.
Abilene,
Texas. Because the main games are Purdue and Michigan.
Right. Well, and this is the thing. It was interesting. When this schedule came out, I was actually very pleased from my typical perspective, which is the RPI related perspective, that the non-con series is going to be a road series, which is going to be helpful to the RPI, and it's against a team that does relatively well in their own conference, so they're going to have a winning record. All of those were all the positives, and now it's like, I wish this was a home series, because at this point the RPI doesn't matter, and it would be nice to see these guys in person. So, but yeah, it is what it is in that. So let's go ahead and get through the rest of our pieces, Chris. Who did manage to shine this week to earn a red belt?
Thanks, Carl. Again, it was like we discussed, there was a lot of zeros on the board for the home team, well, for the road team, for our home team. So it wasn't the easiest to give them out. I'm going to start with defensively, because I feel like regardless of the score, we saw two really, really outstanding defensive plays by Cooper Malamazian. You had the jump throw at Victory Field, which regardless of the camera work live, we got a great view of it on the replay. And as much as it hurt me to remind me of Derek Jeter, I must say it was an amazing play, the throw, the whole bit. And then in the seventh inning on Saturday, I'm not sure how he got to this ball. He was playing deep short. He ends up in the foul territory, calling everybody off, makes the play, and has the baseball IQ to be ready to throw home in case the guy wanted a tag. Like, the whole thing was just, you know, A-plus baseball IQ. Cooper gets the defensive red belt for Tony Butler. For pitching, you know, I was really impressed with Gavin Seabolt. I got to say, that was the ball game that was tight, that was, I understand he gave up a home run to the first guy. I know that. I don't need someone telling me that. I know that. But it was after that, where sometimes people come in a game and they just blew the lead and it's now 1-1. What does he do? He gets 4 1/3 outs. He throws 82 pitches. He gets 7 strikeouts. And I don't know if you've been watching Gavin, but it hasn't been outings like this lately. So he could have easily made this something else. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the young man any runs throughout as the game traveled, and it was just 1-1-1-1-1-1 every inning. But his performance to me was the one of the weekend. The you know, Gavin Seabolt really earned his chops in this one. Because if we could have snuck that game out, who knows what happens, right? So he gets the Joey Donato Award. And for offense, I mean, if there was a week to not give one out, you know, you obviously would have to. But I think the All-American Devin Taylor, he had the most hits from any player. He had 4 hits. He had the 2 doubles and the 3 RBIs and the run scored at Victory Field. And so he's going to get my offensive red belt, the Alex Dickerson Award. So you got Devin, Gavin, and Cooper Malamazian for this week.
Yeah, see, now Zach and I got to see that one, that Cooper Malamazian play live, the one, the throw.
The jump ball?
Yeah, that was one of the best defensive plays I have ever seen. It was jaw dropping.
I was watching it from kind of shallow, I don't know, like over the third base dugout. I was thinking that he'd make the backhand and just eat the ball. He wouldn't even throw it, and threw it across his body from the sidearm and had him by like a step and a half. And that was the play of the year. I think Tyler Cerny's had some pop-ups, some diving plays in the shallow right field, but I think that's the play of the year for me defensively.
I mean, if you go back to our text thread, Zach, you'll see not only red belt, but red belt of the year.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote. I was like, and this is off of me watching a replay. I wish I could have watched that play.
I can tell you, the replay did not do it justice.
Seeing I know it didn't. It never does. When you watch a pure, like when you watch Lindor, like when you watch them live, like I was recently at the Mets, when you watch these guys and their craft and their footwork and the spin, the replay slows it down and you already know what's happening. I mean, you guys seeing that play live must have been outstanding.
Yeah, and Feeney, I do want to bring up, while we're recording, the bit about how you have in the red belt selections.
Oh yes,
we have fielded an entire defensive alignment. We have a player at every non-pitching position. And so that I don't know that I've ever seen that before. But at the moment, Cooper is now well in the lead. He has 3, and most of the regular starting guys have 1.
Yeah, that was wild. When you pointed that out last week after we cut off the video, there's been a defensive red belt for every position from catcher all the way around. And was there a pitcher now?
No,
not a pitcher yet. That's the only thing we haven't had is a pitcher.
But I promise you, that is not my – I had no idea when you said it, and that is not how I do it. Yep. I just really – and when I can't watch, I ask you guys to do it. Some of the picks weren't even mine.
Yeah.
Right. I've never seen you do this in selections before. Amazing. This is a new one. And I think it shows just how much talent and how – after those first few weeks, how solid defensively this team became.
Yeah. Well, and year over year, it's now becoming the best year over year stat improvement for a team. They're up to 969 in fielding percentage, which the season started rough in this category. Yes. So that's a huge improvement, and it's a significant improvement over last season. So all right, well, Zach will preview the weekend opponent, a rare road non-conference series in April, or sorry, in May, at Abilene Christian. Zach?
Yeah, thank you, Carl. Abilene Christian sitting at 27-15 overall with a 15-8 record at home. They'll play host to the Hoosiers for a late season non-conference meeting, and the Wildcats are at 189 in the RPI. And if we're honest, this is a rather meaningless series, but one Indiana would like to win to gain some momentum. The two teams have one common opponent, which is Illinois. both Indiana and Abilene Christian went 1-2 against them in a weekend series. And for Abilene Christian, that was their first series of the year. So the Wildcats are a dynamic group. They have only one guy with double-digit home runs, which is first baseman Grant Watkins. But they also have two guys, Benjamin Greer and Braden Regala, with over 20 stolen bases. So for reference, Indiana doesn't even have a single player with 10 stolen bases above the 300 batting average mark. On the pitching side, ACU has a clear three-man rotation of Dominic Reed, Cade McGar, and Brett Landman. So the Friday night starter, Dominic Reed, was named a 64 Analytics. That's a Twitter account. He was named one of their top pitchers of the week during a six-inning outing, which set up a sweep against Seattle University last week. Their Saturday guy, Reed, holds a 3.66 ERA on the season. Cade McGar, or sorry, Reed is the Friday night guy with a 3.66 ERA. Then Cade McGar, the Saturday guy, is a Texas Tech transfer with a 5.34 ERA, while the Sunday guy, Brett Landman, has a 6.14 ERA. Landman is the lone lefty starter in the rotations, while the Wildcats bullpen only has three left-handed arms, and they really only use one guy, which is Chandler Benson. You'll see him multiple times this weekend. So I think that is good for the Hoosiers with a lefty-heavy lineup batting order. So the Wildcats pitching staff has one thing that does stand out to me, and it's the strikeout-to-walk ratio, which is really good for them. All three of their starters have strikeout stuff. They pound the zone. So I'm really curious to see Indiana's approach, if they stay patient like they did Friday night at Iowa, or if they go aggressive off the rails like they did Saturday and Sunday. So these three games will be played at 7 p.m., 4 p.m., and 2 p.m., Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's Eastern time, all broadcasted on ESPN Plus, not Big Ten Plus like we have seen in the last few weeks. So ESPN Plus, and hopefully this trip to the state of Texas will be a big momentum swing and a late season push. But before this series, Carl will be heading to Evansville tomorrow night. So what should we expect from the rematch with the Aces?
Yes, the Purple Aces are in a rebuilding mode after a super regional appearance a year ago with a veteran team that lost a lot of key pieces. They are 14 and 28 on the season, 8 and 10 in the Missouri Valley. This will be the second game that Indiana's played against Evansville. The Hoosiers took the first contest by a score of 7-4 at the BART. Both teams treated that game as a staff day on the mound. I would assume the same thing for the one that's going to be tomorrow night. Evansville's strength is in its outfield core, led by senior center fielder Ty Rumsey. D1 Baseball's prospect writer David Seifert expects Rumsey to be drafted this summer, described as a 70-grade runner. Rumsey can both cover a lot of ground in the outfield and has stolen 24 bases so far this season while getting on base over 40% of his plate appearances. Overall, Evansville's offense doesn't have a lot else going for it. No player is over 900 in OPS, and as a team, they've only hit 23 home runs on the season. I kind of see this as an opportunity for Indiana to try out some of the arms that we just haven't seen as much in game action. On the mound, the only pitchers who have really serviceable whips are the three weekend starters, who are clearly not going to be part of a midweek contest. But that group still managed to hold IU to just 7 runs in a midweek contest before, and this time Evansville's going to be the home team. So with both teams not in an at-large position, and still, fighting for their conference, for their positioning in conference, it'll be an interesting contest to see in Evansville. All right, Chris, at last, the
Yes.
Pirates have made the call.
Oh
We've been
man,
waiting
bro.
for a long time for this.
I'm
The
telling
call
you.
the
Ugh. How many times did we say, bring him up, bring him up? And he finally gets up there and he hits a bomb on his first at bat. And it was like the fifth hardest ball hit in StatCast era for the first home run. Matt Gorski. With his wife in the stands, being interviewed, his brother was there. I mean, what a moment. what a moment for a really great Hoosier, a Big Ten champion Hoosier, you know, and the way he carried himself here was just, you know, he wasn't the most vocal guy. You know, he was just calm, cool, took care of his business, you know, showed up as a freshman, took somebody's job, then decided, oh, we'll throw him in the outfield now, and he'd start out there. And finally, I mean, he's not a young chicken, this kid. He got drafted in 2019, and he wouldn't give up, and he worked on his craft, and he finally got there. So, I mean, just what a moment to hit the bomb on that was crazy. That was storybook stuff, and it was really great to see. I'm really happy for Matt and his family. And, you know, just we haven't had a position player in a while, you know, from to be able to follow every day. You know, I was looking at who the Pirates play. Oh, they got the Cubs and the Padres this week. You know, I'm trying to think, and is he going to play every day? I don't know. I don't know how they're going to handle it. But it's nice to have an everyday player in the lineup as a Hoosier. We've had a lot of pitchers lately. Like, and then Schwarber, but Schwarber's like old hat. Like, we know Schwarber, you know. It's nice to get some new blood in there up getting called up. And so that's obviously the highlight of the pro update. Just to touch on a few other things that were passed along from David and Pro Bowl Hoosier, we have pitching has really been a stellar. Gabe Bierman, his second hitless week, two appearances now, three innings apiece, no hits, no runs. Luke Sinard, I mean, this guy is killing it. 4 2/3 innings last week, 8 Ks, generated 15 whiffs. I'd expect Luke to get a call up. Another one, Connor Foley, his performance, 4 innings, only 1 earned run, 7 Ks. I got to think a lot of our guys are just in the wrong leagues because they're just dominating. They're going to get moved up, and then we'll see like the median, and we'll see how they do because they're just dominating where they are right now with the arms. You know, it's like when you pick the wrong. Okay, we should have picked the other guys. Move them up, and then we'll see how they do. As far as hitters, Grant Richardson, game-tying 2-out home run in the 9th inning for his AAA squad. Matt Lloyd, I could see him getting called up soon. You never know. No offense to you guys Cardinal fans, but, I mean, they're not throwing hot action right now either. We might call them like the Pirates. So Matt Lloyd could get called up. He had a 6 RBI week. He hit 471. Let Matty get up there. That'll be fine. And then Brock Tibbetts was a home run short of the cycle yesterday. So that was impressive. We do have someone in a major slump. Hitting in the minor leagues, that's Philip Glasser. He only hit 313 last week, which is way down for him. He's been hitting 400 every week, guys. 313, you know, Glasser's got to get it together. No, his glasses really shined. So we've had a lot of pros doing their thing. I'll take a few more. I'm getting greedy now. I want a few more position players up there. You know, I like to see when Heron comes out of the pen, and we're used to Schwarber. Now we got Craig Yoho for the Brewers. But let me get a few more position players. That'll work for me. From whether it's a Big Ten champion like Gorski or not, let's get him through to the majors. That's pretty much the update for us. Now, Carl, speaking of the Big Ten, is going to update us on the Big Ten standings. Rumor has it, I mean, I don't even know how this is possible, but rumor has it one of our pick selectors has gone 14-0, 7-0, 2 weeks in a row. I know it wasn't me.
You're muted, Carl.
This is the thing. It was like, I think only 4 weeks ago that I actually passed Cass for a week in the year-to-date numbers. Cassidy is now one series behind Zach and Josh for the lead.
Well, 14-0. Yeah. Of course he is.
Yes. Yeah, Cass picked Rutgers over Ohio State, Nebraska over Maryland, Michigan over Michigan State, Washington over Northwestern, Illinois over Purdue, UCLA over Penn State, and Southern California over Minnesota. And that was a perfect 7-0. Zach and Josh still had fantastic weeks at 6-1 each. Josh missed the Michigan State. Zach missed on Maryland. Chris was trying to go for the logjam and actually didn't do that bad because the logjam is 4 teams. It's not the 6 team, so that's
six.
Why.
I want six, that's, Carl. Six.
So that's why Chris is at 4-3 week, and well, I'm just not clearly any good at this, and that's why I had a 4-3 week, and I'm now I'm four series behind Chris, who is three series behind Cass. But looks like we've got a three-way race here. Now we're going into to what I think is the most interesting week. When Indiana has a bye week, we actually pick every single series in the Big Ten. So this is an eight series week we're going up against now.
The only one of the season.
Yes, the only one of the season. So this is if there's a chance to make a move, this is the week to do it because there's eight series to be played, and I need them because
Carl, we
I'm
should have
eight
combined
series out
our
of
picks
first.
there, something.
Although I'm pretty sure I'm doubt that my picks are going to be significantly different enough to warrant any type of major move, but we'll see. Okay, so how about well. At 14 and 0, I'm going to make Cass go first. So, Cass, you're going first.
Figured that was coming. I'm going to take Penn State over Maryland. That was one of the easier ones this week. I don't trust either of these teams, but I'm going to go Northwestern over Purdue. Going Michigan over Ohio State. I know that's a rivalry there, but statistically, it does not make sense to really ever pick Ohio State at this point.
Unless they're
Unless they're
playing
playing
Oregon.
Oregon. Yeah. Yes. That is the one exception to the rule there.
no.
Who just swept Oregon State?
Yes.
They couldn't win a series against Ohio State, but they swept Oregon State. I'm
That
just
was, to me, that
baseball.
is the best team we've seen all year. I know we only played them once.
Yeah.
But damn, did they look like they looked like another level. I
Yeah.
didn't even know what we were where we were playing against them.
Yep. I'm going to give Nebraska home field advantage and pick them over Minnesota. Picking Oregon until as long as they're not playing Ohio State, and they're not, so
Crazy.
Oregon. This one was tough for me. I'm going to go UCLA over USC. I'm going to go Illinois over Rutgers. And this one was a toss up to me, but I'm going to go Washington over Iowa. I'm giving them the home field. I think that's going to be a really interesting series to watch.
Chris, what do you have?
Okay, I'm taking a picture of mine right now. Because as Cass was giving her picks, I was like putting dots that they're the same pick, the same pick. No, I was. And then the last three were all different. So I'm like, okay. Because I thought we were gonna have all the same picks. Like this wouldn't even be fun. But I took the photo so you could see what I was talking about. So I did not change any picks. But the first one, two, three, four, five, we were exactly the same. Penn State, Northwestern, Michigan, Nebraska, Oregon. And then just for the luck of the odds or whatever, the next three flipped. And I have SC, Rutgers, and Iowa. So I could make up three series on Cass and be in first place. That's amazing.
I have two different series that I'm cast. So in total, I have Penn State. I'm taking Purdue over Northwestern. I'm taking Michigan, Nebraska, Oregon, and then I'm going to take UCLA on the road against USC. I'll take Illinois on the road, and then I'm going to take Iowa on the road at Washington. I think that's going to be the best series of the week. Actually, really, UCLA, USC probably is, but Iowa, Washington's pretty close.
I do not have Josh's pick yet. We'll have those up by the end of the week. I am going with I mean I've got to be bold with some pick, so I'm going to be bold. I'm going to take Maryland against Penn State. Got Northwestern at Purdue, Michigan over Ohio State. I got Nebraska at home, Oregon. I am picking USC in their home series with UCLA. I've got Illinois at Rutgers, and I am also taking Iowa in the Iowa at Washington series. Again, I agree. That was the toughest one I had to pick for me, but because Washington has been playing really good baseball lately, so that's going to be tough. But that Iowa pitching staff impressed me this weekend, so this past weekend. So I'm going to ride them this week and see what they can do. As far as the standings go, for the Big Ten itself, Again, if you go to iubase.com, the version I put up isn't quite as real time as what you can find at either D1 Baseball or Warren Nolan or any of those sites. But the reason that is that I actually go through and calculate the tiebreaker procedures, which Chris is really going to give me a headache if his six team. I say that it's actually not the case. Once it gets too big, because of how unbalanced the schedules are, at some point you get to too many teams, it just becomes RPI.
What are they going to do, Mikey? How many games can they possibly play?
Because right now there is a four-way tie for 10th place. So that's 10th through 13th. And there is that's a game of musical chairs in which there is a missing seat. And as of right now, this moment, well, actually I say this moment, that's not as if it was, it was Michigan State, but it comes down to RPI. Northwestern and Michigan State last night were one RPI rank out of 300, away from each other. And, I had Northwestern in the higher position. Let me see how it is right now. So this moment, because I mean these can change minute by minute because they're well actually it's Monday, there's not a ton of games being played, but right now Northwestern is at 131, Michigan State at 132, so it's still that way. As of right this moment, Michigan State is the odd team out. What's interesting is those four teams do all have a common opponent. They did all play Iowa, and they all lost 2-1. So that's what bumped it to RPI. Was
they all took a game from them?
They all took a game from Iowa. Yes, all four of them took a game from Iowa, but
that's
only one game.
Work, man.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And then so there are four teams that are another two games back. So things would have to go disastrous for IU to not be ahead of that last four group, which is Purdue, Minnesota, Maryland, and Ohio State. And IU has the tiebreaker, head-to-head tiebreaker over Maryland and Ohio State. Ohio State's actually very far behind.
Well, what about like a 4-5 tiebreaker? Is that RPI?
Well, the way it works is, okay, so the tiebreakers, first is head-to-head.
Right.
When that's in two, if it's two teams, it's head to head. If it's three teams, actually, it's also head to head. But everybody in that group has to have played each other for that to be a factor. Right. So even if you have a three team tie and two of the teams have played each other, if all three haven't played each other, that goes out the window. And then it goes to the next tiebreaker, which is common opponents in conference. And again, that's why like this four group first went to common opponents, but they all had exactly the same record against the one common opponent they had.
So technically, this weekend means a little more than we are saying.
Well, then then after that, it then falls to RPI.
You're saying if it came down to RPI, it would come down to these three games could help us get a four seed in the Big Ten tournament.
It is possible, yes. That is where RPI, and in fact, I don't remember RPI ever actually being a major deciding factor in a Big Ten tournament seeding, but there were scenarios going into the 2022 tournament where there was a scenario in which it could have possibly dropped to, it could have been RPI that was the deciding factor. So
okay.
It's not impossible. The good news is Indiana does have the head-to-head over Michigan State in that group, but Indiana has not played Nebraska, Rutgers, or Northwestern. So, it depends on where the chips fall as to who gets stuck with who. Obviously, the best situation is for Indiana to sweep Purdue in 2 weeks and make that very, very simple, but
even then, the four seed's 7 losses, and we're 12, so that may be a bit more of a dream than I was thinking. Anyway,
yeah, the only thing that fact is that a lot of these teams are playing each other or playing good teams, mm-hmm. but to get up to that four seed is gonna be tough.
Yeah, we're 5 losses back of the four seed.
Yeah, and right now you've got Illinois and Southern California in that group. So the head to heads
That's the
aren't
only right now. Yeah.
yeah. So I that is really tough. I think at this point Indiana's just wanting to solidify being in the tournament. I think a
Okay.
bigger thing to go for in that Purdue series is get that clinched before going to Ann Arbor, so that obviously you're still trying to win those games in Ann Arbor, but it would be nice if the focus could be on setting up the pitching for having to play on Tuesday and having that pitching set up, having the right rest in place. So you still use the guys, but you don't use them nearly as long, and you have it set to where, okay, who we want to pitch on Tuesday is very well rested and can do that. That's what I think the goal is. And this, these non-con games, it's really, I think, about trying to keep adding, adding pieces to the mix. They're gonna need to, it was good to see Aiden Decker-Petty have a really good outing. I know it was in when the game wasn't being contested, but to see Aiden Decker-Petty come out and throw as well as he did was very, very encouraging.
And on the midweek, I guess that was Wednesday at Victory Field, Seth Bennis and Brayton Thomas too. I mean, they look good, and you should get Drew Burr back. I know the run rule probably caused him not to get a look in the game this past weekend, but if not, you'll see him pretty soon if he gets into the mix. They're getting more pitchers back, so they have a chance in a tournament setting.
All right. Well, I think we've hit upon a lot in tonight's episode. So I do want to thank everybody for sticking with us and listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer, Chris Feeney, and Zach Horwitz, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.